Hey guys, Scott here. I got some speeches and events and things to tell you guys about. First of all, on the evening of February the 7th, I'm hosting another Renegade University at ThaddeusRussell.com. On February the 24th, I'm giving a talk here in Austin at Austin Anarchy in Action. On March 2nd, I'll be in D.C. tabling, selling books, hopefully, at the Israel Lobby Conference. But then on March 3rd, I'm flying up to Philadelphia to give a speech to the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party at their convention. But then I'll be back in D.C. on March the 4th to give two speeches, one at the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs bookstore and another at Tenleytown Library. So that's the weekend of March 2nd through 4th there. On March 20th, I'll be giving a speech at East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina. On March 24th, I'll be speaking at the New Jersey Libertarian Party Convention in New Brunswick, New Jersey. On April 28th, I'll be up in Fort Worth giving a talk to the local Libertarian Party group there. And in the first week of May, I'm not exactly sure, it's I think the 3rd through the 6th, one of those days, I will be in San Diego giving a speech for Libertopia. Then on June 21st, the Michigan Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest is going on. I'll be giving a talk there. And October the 6th, planning a little bit ahead now, on October the 6th, I'll be giving a talk at Liberty Fest, again in New York City.
Sorry I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
It's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again. You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
But we ain't killing they army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, Ben, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, on the line, I've got Danny McAdams. For many years, he was Ron Paul's foreign policy advisor in his congressional office. And boy, you can tell the fruits of that. Thank God. And now he's Ron Paul's partner over there and runs the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. Welcome back to the show. How you doing, Dan?
Hey, Scott. It's great to be back with you.
You know what? It's great to have you on the show. And it's just so great. You guys do the Liberty Report. Was it 4 days a week there?
I do it with him 4 days a week, and then on Friday, Chris Rossini joins him, and they do more of an economics-oriented show for Fridays.
Oh, right on. So, listen, here's the thing about that. I love that show, and you guys do such a great job, and, you know, you always have done your homework better than me, even, and Ron, too, and, of course, all the principal and everything. But you know what I really like about it is just how much you guys hate the wars. It's so important to me that... and I hope other people pick up on this. That's where the thrill comes from for me. It's a vicarious thing that people see. Oh, that old gold bug, Ron Paul, that old right-wing conservative old gold bug. And then you look at him and all he cares about is the wars. That's all he cares about. And you guys do such a great job on, you know, covering foreign policy on that show every single day. It's just great. So thanks for that.
Well, thanks, Scott. Yeah, I mean, I think... if anything, I think, you know, Ron has become more radical on the war issue. I mean, I think he's always, of course, always been there completely. But I think he's, the more he sees, the more he realizes, you know, how central it is. And that, of course, doesn't negate the issue of the Fed's role, because the Fed's role is in helping facilitate these wars. But I think he's really honed in on it a lot more.
Right. Well, and, you know, one of the things about that is, and I know this because I've interviewed him 30 something times. And that is, he really knows what he's talking about on every one of these subjects far better than any of these warmongers.
Far better than
most of us. You know, he really is so good at this. So how could he not be outraged? I mean, when you really understand what's going on here, it's pretty outrageous. You know, so I guess that's our segue into Syria. which ally are we at war with that you want to talk about first here, Dan?
I tell you what, this is some of the most fascinating, and not in a good way, some of the most fascinating things that I've seen. You know, it's right now, I mean, it's on pins and needles. I mean, you have the, the deputy prime minister of Turkey saying, hey, if the Americans are over in the east when we finish with Afrin and Manbij, if their proxies or the Americans are there, we're going to hit them, you know. And this is pretty serious stuff. You know, the Turkey is, it's always been a little bit bombastic under Erdogan, but they look explicitly like they are loaded for bear.
Well, now here's the funny thing about that, right, is, okay, it makes perfect sense. They're at war against the Kurds that we're supporting, and we got our guys abetted there, except here's the rub, though. They're our NATO allies, and, you know, we got the most powerful military in the world, and they couldn't possibly mean that, could they? But then I think, maybe they could.
Well, you know, we're taking off, and, you know, the irony, of course, we talked about on the show a few times, you know, U.S. jets are taking off from Incirlik supporting the Kurds. Turkish planes are taking off from Incirlik bombing the Kurds. So, you know, if they pulled the plug on Incirlik, it would not necessarily knock us out of Syria. But it would probably break one of our legs, I would guess, at the very least.
Are these guys all drinking together and laughing their asses off at night? What is going on here?
You know, this is another example of the Trump administration, you know, absolute tin ear. He surrounds himself with generals. His generals, all three of them, have been obsessed with the Middle East, obsessed with getting rid of Iran, obsessed with attacking Iran. He listens to only these people. And it's a bubble, Scott. They believe their own rhetoric. They believe that the Turks, hey, they're just going to back down, you know. They're just a bunch of backwoods people, whatever. And the Turks were like, we are deadly serious about this. We are not going to let a statelet, a Kurdish statelet, develop on our border. This is a fundamental security issue for us. You know, and Trump and his team, they'll back off. The neocons always do this. They're so confident. They're so confident. And then when things completely screw up, oh, hey, it's not our fault.
Yeah, well, so, but answer me this, though. Haven't the YPG Kurds, the Syrian Kurds, outlived their usefulness now that the Islamic State, that, of course, the U.S. was instrumental in creating the situation, at least, in which it rose in the first place, but now that they've been rousted out of Raqqa, and now that, you know, their state is gone, and their foot soldiers are scattered and on the run wherever they go, isn't it high time to go ahead and stab them in the back? Obviously, I'm being cynical and sarcastic about it, but you understand.
Well, we've done it before with the Kurds, you know, there's no question about it. But I don't think quite yet, because
These are the YPG Kurds, too. They're not our friends. The northern Iraqi ruling regime there is not related to the PKK revolutionary types.
Yeah.
Right? These YPG guys are.
In the broader sense, you're right, yeah. But I think, you know, I think that they are our proxy boots on the ground right now in Syria. And that's what we need, because we want to the U.S. government, it's not we. They want to carve out this area. They want to carve out these bases in northeastern Syria. They want to retain U.S. force there, and they need boots on the ground. And the Kurds are about the only thing they've got going right now. So they still need them for a while, but the Turks have preempted them. And if they continue to move on, the Kurds, they will eliminate the American proxy army in Syria.
Hey guys, here's how to support this show. First of all, buy my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. Everybody likes it. And check out the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. Sign up there. The great Eric Schuller has figured it out and is finally putting all 4,500-something interviews up on YouTube. So check that out. Sign up for the feeds at scotthorton.org. And donate at scotthorton.org/donate. Anybody who donates $20 now gets the audiobook first, and you better hurry because it's done. It's just the files are screwed up. But anyway, you get the audiobook first if you donate $20 at scotthorton.org/donate. For $50, you get a signed book. $100, you get a QR code commodity disc. Scan it and get the instant spot price. And for a $200 donation to the show, you get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks. And yes, I take all different kinds of digital currencies as well. That's all at scotthorton.org/donate. And by the way, you can sign up for monthly donations by way of PayPal. And those are really great. Those really help out. And thank you very much, everyone who signed up for those monthly subscriptions. Also, patreon.com/scotthortonshow. If you want to incentivize me to do more interviews, you can donate per interview at patreon.com/scotthortonshow. Anybody who signs up for $1 more per interview there gets 2 free audiobooks from Listen and Think. You can find out all about that stuff at scotthorton.org/donate. And there's an Amazon link. If you want to shop Amazon by way of my link, give me a good review on iTunes or Stitcher or Amazon.com if you've read the book and liked it. And then, of course, always share the show on social media. Tell your friends. You can invite me to give speeches, too. I'm at scott@scotthorton.org. And now, did I read it right that there's 10,000 FSA fighters that are now just under the control of the Turkish army troops?
That's the number that I saw, too, 10,000 strong force. But you know what's really interesting? I was reading a piece today. You may have seen it.
That sounds inflated. I mean, were there ever 10,000 FSA guys that weren't just al-Nusra?
Well, in a broader sense, FSA guys. But I'm reading a piece now that talks from this group of FSA that had been trained by the U.S. saying that, hey, we're going to go in and we're not only going to attack the Kurds, we're going to attack the Americans. So talk about a storm of feces that we've unearthed or unleashed there simply because Donald Trump didn't follow his own promises of, hey, we're going to get out of the business of occupying and overthrowing and nation building. You know, if he'd only followed what he said in the beginning, if he'd only hired people to do what he said he would do, we wouldn't be, and we haven't seen the worst of it. This is going to get a lot worse, and I predict that the U.S. will come limping home at some point. It's just sooner or later. That's the only question.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I wonder about that. Madison, McMaster, they've decided, I guess, so far they're getting their way on this, that they really want to carve out this piece of Kurdistan and have permanent bases there, but they don't want to try to rule any of the population of eastern Syria there. They just want to stay on their base. For what? To attack the Syrian regime at some point? Or to attack Iraqi or Iranians who drive across the now redrawn border into eastern Syria? Or what is their point?
I think it's all about Iran. And I'm sure you saw Stephen Kinzer's great piece. It was on antiwar.com today. Yeah. And he made the great point that, you know, this whole thing being about protecting Israel from Syria. Well, Syria hasn't attacked Israel. And I think Stephen wrote 40 years. And by the way, Israel's more than capable of defending itself against Iran hasn't attacked in 40 years, and the Israelis are certainly more than capable of dealing with any kind of Iran. They've got the most sophisticated military anywhere in the region.
Yeah, well, and on that point, just look at the map. They'd have to go across all of Iraq and Jordan to get there, and they have no land army to do so. How many troops could they even ever try to get there? And then, of course, we know the answer is zero if you take into account Israeli air power, right? That they couldn't ever get anywhere near crossing the Jordan River to threaten Israel with any kind of land force. They have no navy. They got one battleship and some speedboats. Give me a break.
And what the hell would they do if they did? What would they possibly want? You know, what would be the end goal? I mean, Iran is doing quite well simply benefiting from all the U.S.'s mistakes in the region. You know, they benefited in Iraq from the U.S. intervention. They've certainly benefited in Syria from Hillary Clinton's idiotic idea of regime change. All they have to do is sit back and keep doing what they're doing, and they keep winning. So why on earth would they want to launch a big war against Israel, which would result in the destruction of their country, undoubtedly? Yep. It doesn't make sense.
Well, and you know what? I think we know that Donald Trump, from his previous statements, he does at least... Maybe he used to. They may have confused him since then. But he used to understand that defeating ISIS in Syria and then calling it quits and wrapping it up after that would mean that the Assad government and their Iranian Hezbollah, I don't know if he knows about Hezbollah, but their Iranian and Russian allies, that they would recreate the Syrian state and establish monopoly control there. And the idea was, what the hell does he care? Right. But then so it makes sense to think that when they're in the not at a rally, but in the Oval Office talking about this, that the position, as you said, of all his generals is, what? And leave Iran in the catbird seat, even though they're the ones who put him there.
Put him there. Yeah.
Right? We exactly. can't stop now. Look at what we've done. We created, you know, 50,000 Al-Qaeda and spread them to the winds. ISIS slash Al-Qaeda, same difference. And we've empowered Iran here, there, and the other place. And you want to quit now? We've got some loose ends to tie up. And
yeah.
And you could see how they could, from their point of view, they'd never get in. They'd have to, give in and give up on that. They'd have to be Ron Paul to say, forget it. You know, they're just never going to do it.
It's because the neocon canard is like somehow been programmed into their DNA, which is an absolute false reading of history. And it goes like this. Al-Qaeda and ISIS only emerged in Iraq because we left. It was only that wimp George Bush who pulled out. If he'd only stayed there forever with a couple thousand troops, this never would have happened. The same is true in every other intervention. Going back to Vietnam, you know, damn it, we should have stuck around. And this is the canard. We can never leave anywhere. And that's what they're going to say about Syria. So that's why, one of the reasons why there's going to be a hesitation to do the right thing and just declare victory. Hey, great. We killed ISIS. We did it ourselves. Those Ruskis and Iranians didn't do anything. Whatever narrative you want to tell, the media is going to dutifully pick it up. Just get out.
Right.
But they won't allow that to happen.
I'd buy that. Yeah, they could have pulled the same thing in Afghanistan, too.
Yeah.
Look, we beat them. We're only fighting local Afghans now, and they were never the ones who threatened us. It was these transnational terrorist types that did, and so we're going to go. But then, you know what? He, in his Afghan escalation speech, and we know now from the book, I think, sort of kind of accurately portrays this fire and fury thing about it was Bannon was the only one who was trying to stop him on Afghanistan. And as long as he had Bannon next to him, he was able to say, no way, General, screw you guys, right, Steve? And Steve would go, yeah, that's right, Mr. President. And then as long as he had a little bit of backup to support him, he told them at least, I don't think this was just posturing. You know, I mean, the story at least seemed to be in bits and pieces as it came out of the first half of last year was that he did not want to stay in Afghanistan, or at least only to the most limited degree. And he hated what McMaster was bringing him on all this stuff. And they finally isolated Bannon and got rid of Bannon. Well, because Bannon's trick backfired, trying to say that McMaster was anti-Semitic and all this stuff didn't work. And so he lost, attacking McMaster for the wrong things, of course. And so they convinced Trump, this very easy to memorize line, as you just said, it's just, same thing that every TV show anchor, you know, cable news anchor can understand and repeat like a parrot. And that is that, well, when Obama pulled out of Iraq, that's what allowed the rise of ISIS. And so the lesson from that is if we leave Afghanistan, geez, there's locals calling themselves ISIS now, so that counts somehow. And so if we leave Afghanistan, then anything bad that happens in Afghanistan after the troops pull out will be blamed on Trump. And then, in fact, in the Fire and Fury book, they quote Dina Powell, who is the deputy, McMaster's deputy on the National Security Council, saying that, well, look, at the end of the day, if we leave, then the president has lost a war. Is Donald Trump going to lose a war? Are you going to let him lose a war? And that was their argument to the political people. Oh, and it says in there, too, that just as I said in the book is what he should do, is he talked about it like this. That's what it says in the book, that he said, this is all Bush and Obama's fault. This is Bush and Obama's war. Why is it my war? It's the Bush-Obama war. And that's exactly what I said he could do. It was say, look, it's stupid Bush and, evil enemy Obama, whoever he is, secret Muslim Kenyan Obama. They're the ones who built this stupid government in Kabul that can't stand on its own. So why is that my problem? And they're the ones who picked a fight with the local Pashtun tribesmen who are not really the enemies of the American people. So I'm not losing a war. Bush and Obama lost the war. I got here. I'm just the one who's pulling the troops out and calling it quits on their stupid thing. He could have completely spun it and made it their fault, not his. And so that and completely canceled out that Dina Powell rationale that, oh, this would be Trump losing a war. You know, how can Nixon lose LBJ's war? It's LBJ's war. He already lost a damn thing. You know, that's all he had to do. Not that that's what Nixon did, but you understand what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's certainly a counter narrative that could easily have been constructed. But can you imagine someone like Trump, who, you know, I don't know him, but my guess is he doesn't love to sit around and deal with details. He's maybe a big picture type. He has people around him like this. You know, nobody, 99.9% of Americans, myself included, had never heard of Dina Powell before. But it's people like this at the second and third tier that have so much power, so much ability to shift things, and they're completely out of sight and out of mind, but they have such a huge influence. So there are, you know, probably 500 Dina Powells in the administration just pumping things up. They've always been in D.C. They're creatures of D.C. There's no way in hell they're going to go against the military-industrial complex, the neocons, because that's where their bread is buttered.
And like you say, they're all just obsessed with Iran. And Israel and all of their point of view, you know, has a lot to do with this. The Likud and really the neocons, who a lot of times are even to the right of Likud on Iran issues.
Yeah.
That just the same as Mattis. You got 10 million think tankers and pro-Trumpers and never-Trumpers and everybody, always. Iran. And it's funny because no one ever accuses them of doing anything that's not completely false and stupid, like making nuclear bombs, when we all know it's not true. Stop lying. But other than that, they just go, ooh, look at that mean old Ayatollah, and just leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, the big thing now, I mean, the big bogus thing now is the whole issue of ballistic missiles, you know. And to his credit, Obama explicitly, and I can't quote the number, I have it somewhere, but the UN Security Council resolution in 2010 that forbade them from doing ballistic missiles. He explicitly softened that language in 2015 that said, and I forget the exact word, but it is an important word, calls on them to refrain from developing, which is not a restriction on it. But of course, Nikki Haley and the rest of the neocons say, well, Iran is in violation of the Security Council resolution because it's working on ballistic missiles.
Right.
This is the canard that continues and continues. This is their ace in the hole to get out of the nuclear deal in Iran. And it's a total lie. It's a complete lie.
Yeah, well, and yeah, again, and this is the shame of this, and I know you saw this coming just the same as me, that even when Trump has the slightest good instinct, without the knowledge, he'll never be able to stand up against these guys.
And that's absolutely true.
You know, yeah. And Bannon is horrible on Iran too. You know what I mean? He was only good on Afghanistan, and good means he wanted to hire Mercs to do it instead or something. I mean, he was no libertarian, right? He was a particular kind of right winger who sometimes is against some interventions, but that was certainly not enough to rely on. And he certainly didn't put that first. He didn't say, all right, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to end all the terror wars, and then we're going to blame all the failures of it on Bush and Obama. We're going to make a clean break from that. We're going to have peace, and we're going to tell the army, we're going to pay you guys to sit at your bases and not get shot, okay? And that's going to be our compromise, and let's do that. That wasn't him, and that's what it would have taken. And even then, it would have taken Trump, you know, it would have taken, you know what, not Bannon and Trump, you and Ron in there. You know, that's what it would have taken.
Horton. I think he needs Horton in there as the to replace McMaster.
The thing is, we really could have had Ron Paul and Dan McAdams as Deputy National Security Advisor up there writing the studies and putting the platforms in. Man, oh man, what could have been. Think of all the peace and all the people who would not have been shot.
Yeah.
You know, in the last 10 years since Ron Paul did not become the president. And what's funny about Ron Paul running for president, too, is that on one hand, come on, he could have never won. This is America. It's the empire. He's no Donald Trump. They never let a guy like him in there as convicted as he is against this kind of thing. And yet at the same time, actually, that's not true. In fact, there are 300 million Americans, and if only some substantial minority of them had been determined to elect this guy, it would have happened. It could have happened. They could have bum-rushed the primaries. They could have made him unstealable by giving him a 10-point margin all over every caucus and primary. And then they could have done the same thing in the fall. And it just, they had their chance. You know, there's that famous Garrett Garrett quote where he says that, yeah, but the American people have never been given an opportunity to choose between Republican empire. It's always Wendell Willkie versus FDR, you know, this kind of thing. I was like, yeah, but nah, finally we did have our chance, dude. 2008, 2012, two chances, had our chance to completely abolish the empire. And not because the dollar breaks and our economy is completely ruined and our soldiers have to hitchhike home.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see the book really written on that, because there's so much. Of course, I didn't know because I wasn't involved. I was in the congressional office, so I was just watching it on TV, really. But, you know, I would love to see someone with a lot of skill write the book. There are so many people out there that were involved in the campaign. And I've run into people that tell me horror stories of what the party did to them as delegates.
Well, there actually is a book about how they stole 2012. I have it.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, but I mean, I think, you know, just to do the whole picture, and that not just about the Ron Paul presidential race, which is important, but about the difficulty in changing the system and challenging the system. And, you know, you talk about a Trump. I mean, he was elected, I think, in large part because he promised to be the peace candidate, just like Obama mm-hmm. did, just like George W. Bush did.
Yep.
Humble foreign policy. People do want that choice. But once they get in, something weird happens. Something in the water. I don't know.
Yeah, money.
Money.
Yeah, no, the book is Swindled, and I admit I haven't read it, but I know of at least a few of these occasions from 2012 where the things that happened in Nevada and Iowa, etc. And the book is called Swindled, How the GOP Cheated Ron Paul and Lost Themselves the Elections. The Election by Michael S. Alford, A-L-F-O-R-D.
Huh. Well, I'll have to look that up. Alfred. Wow. I'll look that up. Interesting.
So, yeah, and I mean, I give this guy the benefit of the doubt just based on the fact that I remember how it was. And you know what? Politics is supposed to be hard. You know what I mean? Yeah. But they did cheat. Yeah. They really did cheat and break the rules in a lot of places in order to prevent him from winning.
And I think that's anyway. What we saw. I think that's what we saw with Trump in the whole Russiagate thing. You know, I think the military establishment just completely freaked out with what he was saying.
Yeah.
This is their bread and butter. This is not a joke. You're talking about billions of dollars. If you're Lockheed Martin, you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. If you're a general looking to get a great job with Lockheed Martin, you're talking about millions of dollars. And you know, and these people are not about to sit by and let this game show host destroy the gravy train. And you know, and I think we're seeing more and more. That's the origin of it. Just the threat of this guy doing what he said he'd do has really taken us to a constitutional crisis or some kind of crisis.
All right, you guys, this show is sponsored by Zencash. It's a new digital currency, has all kinds of different features. You can send documents and messages and all kinds of other things with it, too. It's great. It's called Zencash. Look it up at zensystem.io, zensystem.io. Read my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and also The War State by the great Michael Swanson. This is such a great and important book. It's about the rise of the military-industrial complex in the Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy years, and goes to show what those three presidents did to build it up and also try to fight to limit its power as well. Very interesting book, The War State. Now, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc., let me tell you, these guys have been around as long as I have, since the mid to late 70s, and they do an incredible job. They charge the slightest of premiums to broker your exchanges in gold, silver, platinum, palladium, and there's no charge at all if you use Bitcoin. That's Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc., RRBI.co, RRBI.co. LibertyStickers.com. We're working on a brand new site, brand new art, and all kinds of stuff. It's not up there yet, but soon LibertyStickers.com is going to be rocking. And of course, if you want a 2018 model website, then you need to go to ExpandDesigns.com and get a brand new website from them. And if you go to ExpandDesigns.com/Scott, you'll save $500. Well, and that's the thing of it, too, because he really, you know, and they should have known this. It's funny to me that, you know, there are for every David Frum, there was a libertarian leaning type, one at my own organization over there at AnnWar.com, who just fell for this stuff, that this was really going to happen. And yet, as I was just talking about with Andrew Bacevich, out of all of the power factions in New York and D.C., et cetera, there was only one that backed this guy and said, okay, no, he's all right, it'll be all right. And that was the Army and the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
And it was so clear that they were going to be given the orders. I mean, I said on this show for a year and a half before he was elected or whatever, or at least a year, that you know, once he's in office, it's going to be, you guys go ahead and do whatever you want. Just let me know. And that's it. CIA, Admiral, General, you guys do your thing. I'll be here. That's it. And that was what he owed them, right? They were the only ones who said that he was legit and that they would back him in power, you know? So I don't know why David Frum didn't see that and think, eh, well, it'll be fine. You know what I mean? And I don't know why Romano didn't see that and think, oh, God, you know, here we go again.
But you know, the neocons, I think there was just that much of a question as to whether he might do what he says.
Right.
That yeah, caused them to freak
they were
out.
Afraid he didn't understand enough to be completely corrupt enough to be consistent on their party line. Yeah.
And, you know, two or three key appointments could have changed things radically, you know. And sadly enough, the quote, you know, pool of talent, unquote, in D.C. skews 99% toward interventionists and neocons. But there are some people of stature that, while you and I may not jump up and down cheering, would have been a heck of a lot better. It would have just taken a few decent appointments like that to have absolutely blown the neocons' minds even worse. So I think that's why they were hedging their bets, and that's why they, you know, they did so much. Even though they're getting what they want with Trump's foreign policy, you know, they're still not persuaded.
Yeah. Hey, man. Talk to me a little bit about what's going on Twitter, where everybody, I got an email, I'm sure you probably did, a lot of people did, saying, oh, we noticed that you've been following some Russian secret spies and retweeting their things, but they didn't provide any evidence of that. They showed some examples, and it was all like right-wing memes that I never retweeted. I don't know what they're talking about, but I wonder, you know, what all you have to say about what's going on there. Yeah,
I got the same thing, too, and I think... And, you know, certainly the effect on me was intimidation, you know. You felt intimidated, like, hey, we found out you've been doing some things you shouldn't, you know. And even though it was couched in terms of, hey, we're here to help, just want to let you know that we've nuked a couple of accounts that you were following, you know, and this sort of thing. But the sense that I had was that, you know, you've done something wrong. And it's disturbing because we don't know the methodology that they use. We don't know what outside organizations, I mean, are they relying on something like Hamilton 68, which is an absolute joke? You know, this is the, what is it, the Coalition to Defend Democracy or some idiotic thing that's behind it in the German Marshall Fund, you know, with Bill Kristol and Mike Morrell and Chertoff and these people. You know, these are the people that are going to be the ones to determine what's a Russian bot and what isn't. You know, and of
isn't
course,
that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Bill Kristol himself, the guy, at least equal with Paul Wolfowitz for responsibility for getting us into Iraq War II,
and for being wrong on every single thing. Now he all of a sudden is going to determine what's a bot and what isn't. And it's not just Hamilton 68; there are other organizations like it. And the problem is once again Washington, because you know all of these members of Congress who are so gutless and spineless. You know, freaking out about the Russian scare. Oh my God, we got to go appropriate a few $100 million because the Russians are coming. And so, where does all this money go? It goes to well connected think tanks like the German Marshall Fund, which is funded by the US government and by NATO. You know, and of course, they're going to follow the neocon policy because that's their gravy train. So, it's an endless loop. Our money goes to organizations like that. To propagandize us and terrify us into giving them more money, and on and on and on it goes.
And we've already seen how they are. You know, that Alliance for Securing Democracy at one point said that antiwar.com was Russian propaganda. Yeah, give me a break. And you can look up Eric Garrison, Justin Raimondo, and myself, and I don't know about Jason, but at least the three of us, we all have our own Wikipedia entries. It's not like it's a mystery of who we are, where we come from, and what we hate, and why we do what we do here.
It has nothing to do with Russia. It's very, very simple. The neocons do not want anyone to challenge their interventionist foreign policy. And as they rack up failure after failure after failure, they're getting more desperate, and they're turning to more authoritarian, and I would say Soviet kinds of tactics. And this is absolutely a Soviet tactic. Comrade, we're following 600 Twitter accounts to find out what the Russians are trying to get you to think about, you know, this sort of thing. It really is a sign of desperation, but it's also a very chilling authoritarian sign, too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these social media companies, you say, oh, it's a free market and private. No, no, it's not. Because as soon as Capitol Hill calls, they come running, you know, like a dog whistle. Oh, what can we do? What can we do, oh, members of Congress? How can we placate you? You know, what accounts should we get rid of? How can we prevent people from reading fake news? How can we prevent them from listening to Scott Horton? It's destroying their minds, you know? I mean, so they're in bed with government, you know? They really are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is, too, I mean, for me, I don't care. I got that email and I thought, oh, that's kind of funny. You know, I'll put that on Twitter and say, hey, look, everybody, you know, tell me another one about the giant Russian conspiracy to get me, you know? I kind of have fun with this whole Russia story. It's such nonsense. It really bothers me that all the biggest conspiracy theories are wrong. You know, I like conspiracy theories, but I want some good ones for a change. Yeah. This is ridiculous. But I just want to say, though,
it does cast a shadow on us, though, because...
Yeah, no, because the message is, you know what, we know who you follow and who you retweet and whatever, and not just it's in our data bank, but we're checking it on you, you know, and as you say, it is almost a quasi-governmental organization in that sense, and hell, I mean, for that matter, as the Snowden documents prove what we already knew since the 90s, which is that what we've all known since James Bamford wrote... what you call it back in the 80s, Puzzle Palace, is that the entire telecommunications infrastructure of Earth is nationalized by the U.S. government. Every packet goes through Fort Meade. We all know that. So the whole thing is their property. The whole thing is really taking place. But they're just kind of reminding you that, like, yeah, no, we're specifically watching who and what you're retweeting, what you're looking at. We can go back and check on you.
Because the goal is not necessarily to use force on you. And this was, you know, certainly toward you know, mid to late stage communism, and certainly still true in Cuba in places like that to a degree. The idea is not to have a cop on every corner. The idea is for you to exercise self-censorship, and that's the triumph. And it works. You know, I can speak for myself. I do think twice before I say anything that's not, you know, negative about Russia. In fact, I don't talk about Russia. I talk about U.S. policy. But you do feel intimidated. You do feel you need to self-censor because you don't want to feed this completely bogus accusation that if you're not on board with, you know, with the neocons, you're somehow in the pay of Putin.
See, I'm the other way, man. You know, I used to do RT a little bit because, you know, I don't know, let me be on TV. And then I thought, you know, and I always understood this about RT. They have their own agenda, making America's policy look bad. But my thing is, what a coincidence. I hate America's policy too, and so it's fine. What do I care? But then on the other hand, you know, I don't like being useful to anyone else, especially any other government, or any government, this, that, or any government. So I quit doing RT. Last time I did it was... I don't know, 2012 or something like that, I guess. There's a few YouTubes up there. But then now that I've been labeled a Russian agent and all of this crap by, you know, Bill Kristol's group, you know, go ahead and call me back, RT. I'll do your shows now. I kind of quit answering the phone on them and whatever. I guess they gave up on me, but I'd go back on there now because screw that. I will not be pushed around in that way. You know, I've known since the 90s that the internet is one big wiretap of us all, and we participate in it. But the game is, as you play the game very well, Dan, is using their own instrument back against them and using it as a form of mass communication to get around the way that they would have it, which is not exactly what their plan for the internet was at the outset, but that's what the people have turned it into, or we're trying to. But it is what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The whole thing is one big goddamn wiretap.
Yeah. I mean, I've always followed Ron Paul's view on this, you know. You know, he doesn't choose the media that he goes on within reason. You know, he doesn't change his message. So anyone that will allow him to amplify his message, again, within reason, he's not going to go on some crazed right, you know, white power thing, of course. But anyone within reason who will allow him to put out his message, he's happy to get it. He doesn't agree with Alex Jones on everything, but he'll go on Alex Jones' show, and he'll talk about non-interventionism and how we shouldn't have war with North Korea. And certainly when he's on the mainstream media, they don't agree with him on anything for the most part, but he's able to do that. And that's how I feel about RT. I love going on there and talking about libertarian ideas, about the fact that the U.S. government shouldn't be having a partnership with Russia to fight terrorism because we should just get the hell out of the region. And that's not what they want to hear. And I've even told them, look, if I come on, I'm going to say something that goes against what you want to hear. And they say, that's fine. That doesn't bother us. That's certainly better than any mainstream station that I've been on where I have to sit for a half an hour and answer 1,000 questions. And then them saying, well, you're not really right for this segment. You know, so I'll take it. If I can talk about non-interventionism, I will take any opportunity to do it.
Yeah. Well, and listen, the fact of the matter is RT is filling a big void in the market there, where, as you say, CNN won't have you. The only time I ever got anything close to that was Judge Napolitano, who was a rogue, you know. He had a very special situation over there where he had a show at Fox Business Channel for a little while there. And even then, he was a little too anti for them, and they eventually got rid of him. I don't know exactly what was the final straw, but...
It was a great show. It was legendary.
Yeah, yeah. But that was, you know, certainly the exception that proves the rule, which is more like what you say, half an hour interview, and then, yeah, no, we're going to go ahead and go with From again.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Thanks for playing.
Yeah. Thanks for coming down and wasting your afternoon. All right, Dan, well, I guess I'll let you go, man. Thanks very much for coming back on the show and talking about the wars and the war at home, too.
Thank you for having me, Scott. It's always great talking to you.
Really appreciate it. Everybody, that is the great Dan McAdams. He's at ronpaulinstitute.org, ronpaulinstitute.org. He runs it. It's the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. And also check out ronpaullibertyreport.com and their channel on YouTube for Dan's show with Ron there. And Chris Rossini's too, as he said, show there with Ron Paul, the ronpaullibertyreport.com. And I'm Scott Horton. You know me. ScottHorton.org for the show, FoolsErrand.us for my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, Antiwar.com and LibertarianInstitute.org for things I want you to read, and follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Thanks, guys.